Hey, how you doing today? Wade with Wade for Wireless, and I hope you're having a great day because something exciting happened for the industry. That's right. The FCC and the Department of Labor teamed up to go over a tower safety workshop for the tower industry, but it also affects the entire wireless industry because safety should be job one, no matter what you're doing. You're an RF engineer and you're out doing optimization, or you're out doing RF design and you're driving sites. You want to be as safe as you can be. Now, the tower climbers, obviously, have a more at-risk job, which is amazing because the job's been really devalued over the past couple of years. But hey, not going to get into that. When February 11th at 445 12th Street Southwest in Washington, D.C., you may know it better as the FCC's headquarters. It's a lot easier to say the FCC headquarters. What was I doing there? I was on the board, panel one. They had three panels. For a workshop to improve tower safety, work conditions, the safety conditions, and another thing I brought up were payment issues. First, I really want to thank the Department of Labor, OSHA specifically, for working so diligently on tower climber safety. I want to thank the FCC for working with OSHA and the Department of Labor to resolve this issue, and it just makes sense. The FCC, they know towers, they know wireless communications, that's their job. OSHA knows safety and health regulations, Department of Labor is in charge of OSHA, obviously, and we're bringing them all together to work for a common cause, and that's to make the work environment for the tower climber as safe as it can possibly be. We would like to have it where there are no deaths ever again from the tower industry, from mistakes, from problems, from inadequate training, anything like that. And these two departments here in the U.S., the federal government, are doing everything they can to make sure that that happens. Okay, so I want to thank them first and foremost before I get into, basically the panel. Before I get into the whole thing, I want to thank Tower Tracker Pro and the links at Wade for Wireless, Wade, W-A-D-E, the number 4, wireless, .com, wadeforwireless.com. And I have a link in there. And basically what they have is a way to walk through closeout packages step by step using software, like either on your iPhone or an iPad. Tells you what pictures to take. And then what they can do while they're on site, assuming they have a good connection, they can upload it and someone in the office can see it within minutes, assuming it uploads within minutes. It'll automatically resize the pictures, walk through everything step by step. And then back at the office, quality control, if a picture needs to be retaken or something's missing, which it shouldn't be missing if you set it up right, and by that I mean they will set it up the way you want it to walk through the closeout package. You can get it all done in one trip. So the climbers are out there, one trip, everything's done, they don't have to go back, bam, that's what you want. Second, I want to thank Tower Safety and Instruction, and they do all the tower safety training that everyone else does. I think they do it better, but I'm biased because, you know, they're my sponsor. The other thing is now at Nate Unite, they're going to show off their drone training. Yes, drone training for the tower industry. We talked about it, and so now they're doing it. And not only that, but they're doing it great. They're doing a great job of it. It's very exciting. They will be at Nate Unite. So will I. I'll be walking the floor. I just want to meet everybody, and I do have a pass, and I would really like to thank Nate for pulling this together. I'm looking forward to it, and I saw a lot of people that are going to be down there at the FCC and Department of Labor's conference for tower safety, the tower safety workshop, and I was really glad to see everybody. And just a personal note, everyone that came up and said hi to me, thank you. It was great seeing you. Now, you know, there are some people I talk to all the time, like Dr. Bridget Hester. Jet and I talk all the time. She's great. I saw Kathy Pierce, you know, and we message each other once in a while. Just a wonderful lady, gave a really powerful speech, which I won't get into yet because I have so much to talk about and write about. So if you're going to read my blog, it's a book. I apologize. It's a book. In fact, I think what I'm going to do for this industry is just write a book on how I think we can, you know, really change things and make things better. So with all that said, I also am impressed, you know, Nate's participation. Nate had a lot of people there. They had a lot of support there, and I thought it was great. I was really happy to see it. Oh, I do have one other thing to promote. My book, The Wireless Deployment Handbook. That's right, for small cell, C-RAN, and DAS. I put together a handbook on wireless deployment best practices. This book is end-to-end. Now what I'm going to do is probably break it down by sections because I want to do a wireless deployment engineering handbook, like something just for the wireless deployment engineers, which I'll get into that later. Let's talk FCC. Let's talk Department of Labor. Let's talk OSHA. Let's talk Tower Safety Workshop. Hey, I was down there and I was live and I was on the panel. It was very exciting. First off, let's describe the problem. The problem is people are dying at tower sites. Climbers for a lot of different reasons. At the beginning, we thought it was lack of training, which, you know, there was a lot of things with lack of training, but with the right safety gear, it seems to be helping these guys, even with their poor training, as long as they learn to use the gear correctly. It saved lives. In the past 2 years, technically in the past 3 years, there are guys that have been stuck, that have been injured, even guys that have fallen but survived. Things are getting a little better out there as far as that goes. This past year, we have had, you know, an injury from, let's say, very poor training. Someone who was on the tower that didn't have all the tie-off or wasn't trained properly. That has happened this last year. The other thing we had was some complacency. We had some very experienced climbers in 2015 that died just because, I guess, they got complacent. They weren't paying attention. Things like that. So we got to look at the big picture. And that is what this workshop focused on. And we do tend to do that with these workshops. We tend to focus on what has happened lately. However, I still want to look at the big picture over the past 2 or 3 years. The problems aren't going to go away if the industry ever gets busy again, right? Aren't we all waiting for the pickup in work? I am. I still think the field work's going to pick up, but I'm very optimistic. First off, that's the problem, okay? That's the why. That's why we're there. We're there to make a difference. We're there to solve the problem of poor training, of complacency. And I brought up some other problems, which someone on the panel, on my panel, brought up, was the unsafe towers. And I'm going to get into this more in panel 2 and panel 3, which will be other podcasts and blogs, because like I said, this is going to be long. I'm going to try to condense it best I can. And I'm going to fill this podcast with a lot of my opinions, because it's all about me. All right, let's go on here. If you think it isn't a big deal, you've never seen how the death affects a family. And that's why Kathy Pierce was there, to tell us about how it affected her family when her son died. And that's something I want you to think about. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to visualize this, okay? You're at a tower site. You're working there, whether you're on a crew, you're on the ground, you're a cell tech, whatever you're doing. You're a manager. You just happen to be there to inspect it for the day. You're a project manager. You're trying to get in touch with your crew. And you see a tower climber going up. So you see him going up. And you may not pay attention. You may not really be paying attention to what they're doing, other than someone's telling you to make sure your hard hat's on because you have someone in the air. When someone's in the air, you wear a hard hat. It's just the way it is. Now, just imagine you see them climbing up. Maybe they're making some mistakes. Maybe they're a little sloppy. Maybe they aren't 100% tied off. But you ignore it, right? You got better things to do. Now, imagine they're about 50 foot up and you look up there. Now, imagine it's your child. Just imagine your child was on the tower. Imagine your child was being sloppy or making mistakes. Imagine your child was at risk for falling, was being pushed to do something they didn't feel comfortable with. They were being forced to do something they didn't want to do, or they were just poorly trained. Now imagine your child's over 50 foot up, let's say 100 foot up, and something happens. What would you do? Do you want your child to die? Do you think if parents could go out and see what their kids do, they would look at this differently? You know, everyone says that's in the industry now, they don't want to climb. Well, not everyone. I talked to a lot of people that say they don't want to climb. They wouldn't climb. They couldn't pay them enough to climb. And yet, when the jobs go out to bid, it's one of the lowest paid jobs in the ecosystem. It's not fair. It's just the way it is. So imagine your child's up there making, let's say, 15, 20 bucks an hour. If you see him making mistakes, what are you going to do? You're going to scream at him and correct it. That's what every crew should look out for each other. They should look out at each other as brothers and sisters. They should look out at each other as if it's their child up there. All right. All right, I preached enough. I'm going to hear back from all you guys and all the hate mail saying I shouldn't do that. Let's talk about what was covered at the workshop, okay? I gave you the why. We had the opening speeches. Tom Wheeler, chairman of the FCC, obviously, you know, the guy we all look to for everything. I would say wireless. I was going to say towers, but I would say wireless. You know, we look at him for policies and we look at him for the business side of it and everything. So, you know, rock star of the industry. Then we had Roger Sherman, who was very active in this, and the guy really put everything together. And I really want to thank from the FCC, I'd like to thank Mr. Wheeler and Mr. Sherman for all they've done. The other thing he pointed out is he was so appreciative that Kathy Pierce could, you know, give her speech. I keep bringing up Kathy, but let's face it, we're really grateful for what she's doing. And it's so sad that she had to go through what she went through and experience the loss that she did for all the wrong reasons. Now, from the Department of Labor, we had Eric Selesnow, who was there, and he did a great job. You know, he talked mostly about the apprenticeship programs and how they were tasked by the president to put out the apprenticeship programs. The one thing he focused on, that the apprenticeship program shows that we're building careers. We're not just giving people jobs. You know, we want them to have a career path of where they want to go. That was good. And that's the whole idea of TIRAP. Now, there wasn't as much brought up about TIRAP in this session, but TIRAP is underway, seems to be working. And in panel two, they actually have quite a bit about TIRAP. Fourth, there was Matthew Colango, chief of staff with the Department of Labor. And he talked he gave a pretty good speech. You know, again, he brought up Kathy and he also brought up Ernie Jones and how these things can happen even to the most experienced climbers out there. And Ernie was very experienced and contributed a lot to safety and was very active in NATE. Ernie was really amazing, and it's a shame we lost him. Enough about those guys, right? They all gave their speeches. I have the link in there if you want to see the video live. Now, I'm just going to give you a warning. It went on for 4 or 5 hours, okay? And the video, I watched it again for this research, and it just stops. For me, I couldn't get it to work solidly. Just giving you a heads up. FCC for communications company, you got to get that to work solidly. First, I did go through it. And our moderators, I just want to go through who everyone is, right? Of course, I was on the panel because this is all about me. But don't worry, I'll cover panel 2 and 3. I just want to cover them in order. So we had Claire Wack, who is the attorney advisor, CIPD, WTB, FCC, but basically with the FCC. And then we had Jessica Duma. Jessica's a regulatory analyst for OSHA. And of course, she's on there too. Now, also, on panel 1, we had a full panel, no holds barred panel. It was like Raw with the WWF, with World Wrestling Federation. So here's who we had. Of course, we had me. Jason Becker, National Radio Operators Branch, BLM, really a federal branch of the government. We had John Parham, who works with Jacobs Engineering Group. We had Don Doty, who was there representing NATE. You know, he does quite a bit in the industry. We had Kevin Schmidt, who was there representing the NWSA, National Wireless Safety Alliance, Safety Alliance. And then we had Angela Jones of Union Wireless, who was she was something because she's a structural engineer, a project engineer, and she said she took the climbing courses, so I'm assuming she's a certified climber, which was pretty cool, right? You have a structural engineer that's a climber that can tell us how these things are done. So, first question, how should companies go about creating an environment where climbers can report unsafe conditions or a dangerous situation without fear or reprisal from their direct boss? So we went around there, and what I brought up was companies need to have an open culture where someone can not only feel comfortable going to their foreman or a coworker, but if something doesn't work out right, or if they're in a situation where they feel the foreman's pushing them too hard, or they're being forced to work in an unsafe, they're doing something they don't feel comfortable with or safe doing, that they should be able to go above the foreman. There should be some way, the field worker should have someone else to report to, whether it's a safety person, whether it's another manager, whether it's someone in a safety department or another foreman they can go to. Angela brought up how their company, being a smaller company, enables them to do that because everybody knows everybody, right? And then John pointed out about Nate's magazine article in the Tower Times by Tom Bonk of how culture should be open and geared around safety, which is great. Jason brought up about how they should have reports daily for the climbers to review ahead of time, which I think is outstanding. If a climber can look at that before they even get to the site and see the issues and the problems, they'll be prepared for those issues and problems before they're in the middle of the tower site on top of a mountain, middle of nowhere, so they actually have what they need. And I know it sounds silly, but it'd be nice to have bee spray if you know there's a hornet's nest up there. Makes it a lot easier to deal with. Now, with that said, you know, most climbers that are in those situations usually have spray or have some way of dealing with that. It's not like you go up and knock something like that down. You got to spray it with that 30-foot spray. Anyway, getting off the point. So then Claire asked about contractual controls, since there could be so many contractors between the carrier and the climber. Kevin brought up about the carriers will implement training requirements. Don said that this is already commonplace for the most part, that we need better supervision and oversight. And I brought up that we need a way to audit the safety at the sites. Now, you can watch this, but we just need a way to actually look at what's going on at the sites for real. And the reason I say that is because how do you know? How do you know what's going on? I mean, great, it's in the contract. Whoopee. The carriers already have that in the contract now, and somehow we still have people out there doing crazy stuff, stuff that isn't safe or they shouldn't be doing. And then Don mentioned that they are coming out with a credentialing system so you can actually check people's credentials on the site so that you actually know who's doing what out there. The credentialing will become mandatory at some point. With my point, I was just saying, just because it's in the contract doesn't mean the climber even knows it's in the contract. All they know is they have to get the job done and they're doing something crazy. It's just something to think about. Next, Jessica asked John about his thoughts about the contracts. John brought up that the contractor's language will help, but he also mentioned that it's up to the tower companies to have the proper culture, that even policing them may not be enough. And that's something I brought up. I brought up we need a way to police the industry, for the guys to police themselves, for tower crews to be able to report when there's not a certified worker on site, because they know, right? The climbers know pretty much who's certified and who's not. They know who's experienced and who's not, and they also know who's putting the crew at risk. They also know that if they're asked to do something stupid or else from their foreman, that they need a way to report that. And I still think you need an audit system, because if you have a whole crew of dumbbells, it's not going to change anything because they're all just going to do stupid stuff and try to get home as soon as possible. Those are the guys that are worried about quantity, not quality. It really should be a balance. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting off point. Jessica asked Kevin, I did skip over one thing. John also brought up that OSHA has the 800 number, which I am going to have in this post. So he's saying if you have any dangerous problems or unsafe work conditions, well, he said OSHA would send someone out, but who knows where you're going to be? You know, are they really going to go out to the middle of North Dakota, middle of nowhere, and say 2 foot of snow to investigate this? Maybe, maybe not. And I think it's just the reality. You know, they don't have enough people. However, I do recommend you call the OSHA hotline and report these problems just so they can keep a record. And I want you to report not only who you work for, or if you don't want to do that, report who the sub is and maybe report the tower site and also report who the carrier is you're working for. You know, just give them full details. And there's Whistleblower Protection Act that will save you from getting fired if that's what you're worried about. Besides, most tower crews will find all new reasons to fire you. No, I'm kidding. Listen, I just think it's a good idea to report everything, right? You have the 800 number now. Put it in your phone. Why not? Okay, then Jessica asked Kevin about how contracts are packaged for bidding and how that would affect the climbers. Kevin brought up about how they're, you know, when they're put out to bid, and I know this for a fact, the climbers just have a bulk package. They're looking for a basic price per site, okay? That's what they're looking for. I don't care what the carriers say. They don't look at every tower site until there's a problem or an issue or if they have to break it down. I've been through it. If they're going to look at every tower site, they're going to spend a year going through every site. I get it. I get where they're coming from. But that's how it puts out. They have bulk sites. It goes to a sub or to a managing company or a contracting company, and then they break it down into smaller groups, and then they go out to smaller partners, let's say, or smaller people they bid it out to. The carrier really has no idea what climber's on site until that climber has a problem or somebody dies, you know, unfortunately. The other thing that came up, this sparked a whole conversation about safety, you know, and training and so on. But John also said that complacency is a real problem. John was mentioning that the problem this past year has been complacency. Here you have all these experienced workers that are still falling, and they just get comfortable in what they're doing. They do silly things. They aren't paying attention. And I think he used an analogy like how many people have leaned back on their chair and just fallen because they weren't paying attention. When a tower climber does that, he can't make that mistake. He can't get complacent or he dies. And it is true. Climbers are up there every day. They tend to get a little lazy, a little cocky, and they try to take shortcuts that they think will save time. And then, you know, that quick, something bad can happen. Then Jason pointed out that the work has to be done at the beginning of the contract to report close calls and problems on site, to record all issues that the climber ran into at the site. And that's very important. And I do agree with that. If you can have a log or report that, that's a great thing. Then Angela pointed out that the tower needs to have proper anchor points. You wouldn't have a lot of these problems if they knew how to tie off to something and something was obvious and easy to tie off to. So something for the tower owners to look at, in my opinion. And tower owners should do that anyway. So then the next question, Claire asked Angela, what more should we do on the tower to improve safety? And Angela, who brought up some great points, by the way. So Angela brought up that towers need to have dedicated tie-off points for the climbers to attach to at the proper locations. That way they can eliminate dangerous mounting situations and the dangerous situation that climbers get into. She brought up specifically the T-arms that are on monopoles that are often called the Widowmaker. She brought up about how TIA 222 F and G, she brought up both of them, how they do a lot of the requirements, but how G is so much better and defines a lot more of that, much better than, say, F did. She also says how experienced climbers know how to handle some of these situations, but maybe someone inexperienced doesn't know how to handle it. And you're already on the job site. It's hard to say no sometimes, because if you have to do something, you have to do it. These are all things that you have to look at, how to make the tower safer for the climber. I know the tower companies don't want to hear that, specifically, you know, American Tower, SBA, and Crown. And I'll get into that later. It's a whole issue for me. They really need to make them safer. They need to take feedback from the field. I think they should put a little money into safety on the tower. Get into that later. So then Claire asked a question from the audience, you know, does the accredited ANSI program void the current Comtrade certification? And the answer was on the card, actually. Actually, the answer is no, because it's supplemental certification. So for the supplemental certification, it doesn't matter. But that's where the NWSA is going to make a difference. Then Jessica followed up with a structural discussion about what we could do for the existing towers and if retrofitting can be done for the dangerous towers out there. Angela told us that you could improve the towers out there. Many could be improved, let me put it that way, or be made better. But she also said if given a choice, they'd probably just build a new tower. I'll tell you one thing, with the way permitting and regulation is, to do improvements to towers is painful, which is probably why the tower owners don't want to do it. There are so many regulations in place with permitting and what you can and can't do in a tower. That's changing for wireless work, but if the tower owner wants to make a change and make it safer, is it really worth all the effort they have to go through with zoning and permitting just to put a, you know, a couple brackets on there? I shouldn't say it like that, but let's say some dedicated anchor points. Sometimes when these local governments get in the way, they prevent a lot of safety because it just costs too much money and time to do the right thing. It's very frustrating. Again, I'll address that later. So then Jessica asked Jason what occupational medical surveillance is required. Well, and specifically like physical fitness, if someone's on medication, what's going on. So Jason answered with basically a medical check is needed to pass prior to getting hired, especially someone working in that industry. You have to be healthy. Now, that's an interesting thing too, because you got to put a little money into your program before you hire somebody. They have to go through a physical. They have to make sure they're healthy. They probably have to have a lot of things checked. Most companies don't do that. They just, hey, they look at somebody. That guy looks healthy. So he brought up a good point, and it's nice when you have a structure like that where you can do that. Don then brought up the point that physical fitness matters. You really have to pay attention to whether someone is physically fit and mentally fit or chemically fit. And what I mean by chemically fit, if they're on some type of drugs or painkillers, it could be prescription medicine. It doesn't have to be illegal. All you guys that are going to talk about illegal drugs, I won't get into it. Let's say it's a legal drug. Let's say you're on some medication that could affect your judgment. Do not drive heavy machinery, like a car, when you take this medicine. Now you're going to climb up a tower. Then Don brought up about how the STAR program was a good program to address these issues. And again, safety culture plays a part in this. One thing I did mention is that Jason did bring up how the tailgate meetings, the crews should cover this. They should discuss this. They should know what's going on. And I feel that way too. I feel like the foreman should really know his crew. He should know what's going on. So then Jessica asked me about traveling, how long days affect the climbers. So I brought up that I really think if you can plan ahead of time for not only the job, but the travel time, you're going to have travel time, right? I brought up about how a lot of crews work 14-hour days. It's just sort of how it is. And any of you guys that work out there, you know, you work when the sun's up, especially in the summer here in the Northeast. You work long, long days because you want to get the work done. You want to get as many sites in as possible. It's just the way it is. You're going to work these long days, but you still have to be physically fit and mentally alert. It all plays into it. It's all an issue. Therefore, if you plan ahead of time for that, it can really make a difference. Something that people don't realize that one crew may bid, you know, let's say $200 less than another crew on the tower site and they get it. But this other crew might be coming from like 6 hours away instead of being right at the tower site. You know, you're going to get someone from out of state, out of town to come in and work on a site because they bid less money. I don't know why they bid less money. They just did. But that happens a lot. It's very common in this industry. And sometimes guys are just slow. So you really have to take that into account when you're planning this out. It's very important that you understand what you're up against and what your timeline is going to be so you don't get these guys to do something irrational and irresponsible. You want to make sure everyone's ready. And in the past, a lot of problems have been put into contractors for forcing their subs, so to speak, that if they want to get paid, they have to do it, which is still common today. People still don't get paid today. Then Jessica followed up with a question to John about how to structure bids so that everything is taken into account and that the crews that you hire are in good financial position to complete the work. He brought up about how they have to plan everything out. It's really up to the crew to be safe. You know, safety is really up to the crew on the site, but they can help with proper planning. So when planning out a deployment, it takes a lot of work. Now, he also mentioned how his company now works with partners. Partners they select ahead of time. With these partners, they're in a better situation to understand what their capabilities are and also to know where they're at and where their travel time is, how local they are to the site, and they bring the partners in on the planning. Listen, we all put things out to bid. I get it. That's how we keep prices down and how they keep things affordable. But if you work with partners or if you have people in the bid that you know what their capabilities are, then you know exactly what they can do, where they're coming from. And also if you have their people, which apparently John said he brings their people into his office, they know exactly what they're capable of. I think that's very important to understand that, what they can do. So you can plan to work out ahead of time, 60 days ahead of time, 6 months and 12 months. Now, don't get me wrong. You can't plan everything out because things do go wrong. Equipment gets delayed. There are problems with site leases, permitting. Yeah, you know, there's so many issues that slow down site builds, but you can do the best that you can at that time. You plan it out the best you can and you remain flexible. So I commented that that's really a good idea. It's a lot of work, but I understand it and it's great that you can do that. Now, Jason brought up about a model that the Navy has to lay out the pre-planning, looking at all the resources, the time and the tasks. Then I brought up that the partners program was a good idea because I do think that's a good idea. Jason did point out about what the Navy can and can't do. He outlined what the Navy program does with its resources, its time, and also look at the people to see whether they're healthy, whether there's an issue, whether someone's out sick, and consider all that into the planning. And you have to be flexible with your plan. And I know, guys, I'm going over high level. You can read the blog, which is well over 3,000 words. Good luck with that. It's a lot to read. But then Claire asked, Kevin, how do you start the partnership programs? And how you know that they have qualified climbers and technicians? So then Kevin came back and said that right now there's only paperwork. You really have to trust them for the paperwork you see. However, when the WSA comes out with their standard certification program, then you can not only see the certification, but you will have a number and you can look it up to make sure they're certified properly. And then Jason mentioned about the inspections that need to be done at the towers, and there has to be oversight on the climber's performance. All that needs to be done, but at least now you can tell if they're certified. And Don mentioned how the tower is installed once, but it will be climbed 100 times. So they need anchor points. They need to be planned out. And that's when Angela brought up about the OSHA tiers for safety, to see that the towers are engineered safely. Yeah, we went full circle there. Conversation really went around. Then Claire brought up and asked about how the newer companies that need to train a skilled workforce, how they would plan out the work to keep a trained workforce. Don mentioned the broadcast industry, how during the downturn, they actually made some transitions to wireless work because really the broadcast work dried up, you know, when the FCC changed everything from analog to digital and then they put a hold on stuff. They transitioned. However, I just said, if there's no work, what are you going to do? There's no work, you can't pay people. Would they come back to this industry after what they've been through? I don't think so. So I think that's a tough call. I don't know what to do about constant work in the industry. It's like any industry. You either have work or you don't. If you don't have work, what are you going to do? Finally, then we wrapped up. Claire asked us for each of our best practices. And Angela said that to make sure the tower is engineered properly for safety, properly for safe by having the proper anchor points on there, because that really matters. You want to make sure you're as safe as you possibly can, and it starts with the tower. You have to have someplace safe to tie off to. Don brought up about how Nate is working with ANSI, I think, on A10.48 to release the criteria for safe practices with construction and maintenance towers. Kevin brought up about how the contractors should be trained properly and make sure that everyone on site is certified, and that each climber should tie off 100% of the time. Stop the work if there's a risk to anyone on the crew. Don't be afraid to stop the work. John says that the main thing is planning. He went through that. Jason said that they should always climb as partners, work together. Climbers are interchangeable, and they all should be prepared for any problems they might have. They also provide safe practices. And then I brought up that there has to be a way to report unsafe towers to someone other than the tower owner. American Tower and Crown Castle, I know for a fact, they do respond pretty quickly if they know something's not safe out there. I don't know about SBA just because I don't know a lot of people that worked with them. I also said that the climbers need to get paid for their work. And that's really the number one complaint I get. Just last week, I heard from some climbers that were stranded somewhere because they didn't get paid. Now, I don't know all the details, but that's a real problem. If you don't get paid, you can't do anything. A lot of these guys, you know, are living on the edge as it is. So I still think that's a number one problem in the industry. Don't get me wrong. I want to see anyone die. I want to see anyone get hurt. I'd like to see everyone get a fair shake and get paid. And one thing that did come up in this conference is it would be nice if this could be a career and not just a job. So then we closed. Claire asked us to revisit the best practices document, which they did give out down there. If I can find the link, I'll put it in. If not this one, I'll put it in the next post. So wadeforwireless.com. And basically this post is, I'm going to name it, the FCC and Department of Labor Tower Safety Workshop Panel 1 Breakdown. So when you get in Wade for Wireless, look for that post, okay? I covered a lot. I know it's a lot. And by the way, to report an emergency, fatality, or imminent life-threatening situation, contact OSHA immediately at 1-800-321-6742, 1-800-321-OSHA, 1-800-321-6742. And I have all the links in there for OSHA. For one, OSHA seeking public comment for safety and management. I have the link. I have the video to the workshop and the information about it. I have a link. At the bottom of the post, I have where OSHA, the complaint website for non-emergency. So if you want to complain to OSHA, but it's not emergency, the website's in there. Okay? Just look at the bottom of my post. Complaint information and whistleblower protection explain. I have that in there for you guys to... If you want to complain, if you want to know more about Whistleblower Act, you can read about it. How to file a safety and health complaint. I have the link in there. And again, the OSHA contact page to report unsafe working conditions. I have the link in there. And I know I'm going over this, but I want you to know that each one serves a purpose. I want you to know that OSHA's here to help. I want you to know that you, as a worker, need to look at OSHA as your friend. A lot of supervisors don't. They'll say bad things about OSHA. They'll say that OSHA wants to shut down the website. How funny is that? That OSHA wants to shut down the worksite. Let me tell you something. If OSHA shuts down a worksite, it's for good reason. Granted, there can be misunderstandings. Someone could not be trained properly, maybe on the OSHA side. But the reality is, if OSHA shuts down a website or a company, there's a reason. Nobody likes losing a paycheck. But nobody wants to die either. Am I right? I got all 10 of my fingers. I'd like to keep it that way. I got both arms and both legs. I'd like to keep it that way. For all you guys that think the government is out to get you or not there to help, you have OSHA. OSHA is there to help. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Occupational. That's where we all work. We all have an occupation. We're all building careers. We're building our savings. And we want to do it as healthy as we can possibly be. Okay, we wanted to be as safe as we can possibly be. The wireless industry is a fun industry. It's cool. It's growing. There's a lot of careers for growth, a lot of avenues that you can take. Let's make the most of it, okay? All right, everybody. Be smart, be safe, and pay attention. Good heavens, don't get complacent. Pay attention to what you're doing. See ya.